So joining me here today is Russ Pearson, Dina Men at LCC, and
Roger Ebbage and Brendan Cervantes. Tell me a little bit about your backgrounds as far as the classes that you are bringing to LCC.
So we have been on the LCC campus since 1980. I came to the program in 1992 as its coordinator and full-time faculty.
He was 12 years old at the time.
I was. And it was in commercial building energy efficiency. Since that time, we have recognized the need for water conservation. So we started another program in 2006, specifically water conservation, mostly in the built environment, although we do ag, landscaping, some outdoor water topics, but mostly it's in residential and commercial industrial environment.
All right, and Brenda?
I went through the program, the water conservation program, and graduated in 2013. And then I spent a few years here in Florence working for Public Works, and then went back to work for Roger as the project specialist to work with both programs. We have a National Science Foundation grant that allows us to market these programs across Western U.S. So now we're looking at not just finding students in the local area, but also looking for students and places to network as climate change and water conservation becomes a big item. And energy management has been the same for a while, but water is coming into that same lens.
So speaking from the student aspect of it, having mm-hmm. gone through the program, what did you like about the program that when you got done, you were able to get into the actual field that you were educated in?
In addition to water conservation, I also took GIS classes, which are mapping. And so that was what I did with the city, was did I mapped the infrastructure of the city. But the water conservation aspect helped me to understand a lot about where the water goes, where the water comes from. So looking at the wastewater plant as the exit of water and the water treatment plant as the coming in, and how water, how the city gets its water. We have, the city of Florence has the unique situation of having a dunal aquifer, which is, there's only several of them in the United States. So it's a pretty unique way that they get their water. And so having my background in water, that helped me to understand better how the city operates those two areas of water and how it flows through the city.
Roger, does taking the class help you to understand a better need of why we need water conservation? Because as Brenda said, with a dual aquifer, we here have a pretty decent supply of water for now. I don't know how that will change in the future. But does that kind of help people get an understanding of the need for water conservation?
It does. And in the Northwest, as you just said, George, we have a basic philosophy that we just have water forever, and we don't. For the last five years, the governors have declared Oregon specifically a drought state. And so 90% of the state was in drought then. It's hard for people to realize that when we get rainy days like today. Mm-hmm. And they think, oh, we're filling our reservoirs, we'll be fine. Well, it's not really the reservoirs that we're concerned about. It's the snowpack. And when that doesn't happen, then nothing is fine. And so our agriculture suffers. The amount of water that we have for recreation suffers. It just goes down the line. The program does help people understand that there's a critical need for conserving water, using it differently.
Well, and obviously the change in climate patterns too, and, you know, the temperature change and with global warming has affected the snow caps. I mean, some years we might get an extreme amount, like last year. We seem to do a little bit better, but then we might go 2 or 3 years without getting that.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things where a student can come in there and get a complete knowledge of how the system works.
How the hydrological system works at the very beginning, and then that we are now dealing with a finite amount of water and finite amount of snow. And you're right, you can take a look at the Cascades annually and kind of gauge what our snowpack is without taking a stick and running it into the snowpack and finding out how deep the snow is. You can see the snow leaving the Cascades, Mount Hood especially, of course, and you know how far down the snow line is, or how far up the snow line is, excuse me, in June, and tell what sort of a year we've had. Students become dialed into it. First of all, they want to take our program because they recognize it's an environmental issue, but then they really become dialed into what to look for, how to address things like a low snowpack, and mostly talk to their family and friends about it. I mean, getting a job is the end game. Having the information and disseminating it is really an important piece.
So getting the job, what kind of areas or what kind of fields will most likely benefit from this degree program or this plan course schedule?
So where students can anticipate going are to the water service providers, the people that give us water. But the amount of work that's needed across the board in school districts, city, state, federal government, engineering firms, they all need water experts because they are all having to address the issue, right? And so without a water expert, they may have a civil engineer on staff or a mechanical engineer on staff. And not that they don't know a lot, they know a tremendous amount, but they know it as it refers to their system. You know, in a mechanical engineering system in a building, we use water to transport the heat from one point to another. Well, that's a significant amount of water that we're using. And if we just let it go out the cooling tower to release some of the heat that it's picked up in the middle of the building, then we lose an awful lot of water, right? And so
are there opportunities to reclaim that steam and condense it or return it back to the water state?
As it goes out of the cooling tower, not likely. In the design of a building or redesign of a building, having that notion in mind, absolutely.
So you can get it before it goes out the cooling tower.
So at our location, we're at the downtown campus in the middle of Eugene, and our system recovers the heat when we remove it from the space. And so we have what's called a heat recovery chiller. Chillers are the devices that create cold water. The way you create cold water is taking heat out of water.
Right. A lot of people don't understand that.
No, they don't.
Air conditioning is actually removing heat,
yes,
not adding cold air.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So, and good to know that. The system at Lane has, through this heat recovery chiller, we have a thermal system where we pump the hot water into the ground and the ground absorbs it. We have 54 300-foot wells underneath the downtown campus, and when we have a point where we need to get rid of water, or I'm sorry, when we need to get rid of heat, we run it down those wells and the heat is given off to the earth, and what we get out of that is colder water. And then that heat is there to reclaim when we need it. So we haven't let it go to the atmosphere. Answers your question, I think.
And this is just an aside. You got to wonder who thinks this stuff up.
I know.
You know, at some point someone goes, it's sort of like the guy who first ate an oyster. You know, it's like, who decided that was a good
that
thing
was
to
a
do?
Good job.
But, you know, to take this, and I guess you learn some of the mechanics of this in the classes of how this works, why it works, and how the process it came about.
And more importantly, how to do the calculations so you can understand how much water you're losing, how much heat you're recovering, what the BTU, British Thermal Unit, content is of that. And all of that converts to money, and money is really the important thing that most people look at. The environment, sure, we'll take care of the environment along the way, but they want to know how they can conserve on their water bill and on their electric bill, and these are two ways that you can do it.
Now, can someone in these classes also take this to their house and say, well, I've got my house here, what can I do to make my house better?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in the Introduction to Energy Management class, the one that I teach, brings students into the program, we have students do a home electrical audit. Natural gas is a little too advanced for them to kind of understand and to calculate early on. And so I have them do a home electrical audit. And I do that by having them monitor on off times for lighting, for stereo system, for computer. So they turn a computer on, note the time that it went on, and then when they turn it off, note the time that it went off. And we find that most don't turn their computers off. So interestingly enough. So that gives them kind of a foundation of what we're looking for as an auditor. In the next term, we do a residential class. And we do the residential class because now we're going to expose them to energy-using systems, including the building shell. So and so it's heating systems, cooling systems, lighting, everything that, that is involved in. And that's when we start getting into natural gas assessment. We do that class so they can understand the system function, because the next term they get into commercial systems. And the commercial systems are big, overwhelming, noisy in some instances, not a very clean space, a little smelly. And we want them to be familiar with what they're going to be looking at, but on a larger scale before they start looking at it. We want them to learn these basic fundamentals in a very comfortable environment, and their home is it. And so, answering your question, yeah, they can directly, after the second term, they can directly apply what they've learned to their home.
Now, Brenda, what participation in the classes do you take on as far as with this program?
I don't do any of the class.
Okay.
I'm more into
support.
The support, the marketing. I reach out to utilities. I look for mentors. Our fieldwork mentor is a portion of these that make online successful, is by connecting with people. Like if we have a student in Florence, then we connect with the local utilities or a local professional to help them get the ability to do some fieldwork mentor, like Roger was talking about the residential energy. It's like there's a piece that they need to do in the field, and so we would network with the person. So part of what I do is that some of that networking and reaching out to people and looking at ways to find students and mentors wherever we happen to look, Oregon, California, Washington, wherever we're looking to do that.
Now, obviously, one of the recruitment tools is being right here, I guess, right now, finding students for this. Mm-hmm. Russ, what do students need to know coming into this program, as far as, you know, how they work with Lane Community College here,
right,
and then associate it with Lane Community College in Eugene?
Well, these are online classes, so they're out there on the web. But when we have students from Florence, they're taking online classes. We do everything we can to be sure that they feel entirely supported. I don't know the specifics of how these courses are set up. Sometimes they're sort of self-contained, where testing and everything is in the system itself. But when there's other online classes where a student has to still take a conventional test not inside a self-sustaining system, we proctor those tests on our campus.
Right. They may take all their classes online. When it comes time to take the test, they go into the,
exactly,
the classroom.
And instead of driving an hour and a half to Eugene to take that that test, they can come to the Florence Center. We help with any other kind of connections to faculty, to staff, to resources they might need from the library, all of those kinds of things. We have obviously solid internet and many, many workstations. Students, if they don't have access to good internet, they're welcome to be in our facility and working as long as they want, any time of day that we're open, from 8 to 9 p.m., 8 a.m., I should say, till 9 p.m., and answering their questions about financial aid, putting them in contact with the right folks on main campus when necessary. So we do a lot in terms of student support. They'll get more student support probably living here than they would if they were in Eugene, mm-hmm, taking the course.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
And you're doing a lot of tutoring as well.
We are. And literally just today, we were talking about ways even to enhance our capacity to offer tutoring in additional coursework. So, yeah, we do a lot of that as well.
Let me stray here for a moment, because it's kind of what I like to do. And if you don't have an answer for that, that's fine. But how dire is our situation ecologically when it comes to water, when it comes to climate? Are you familiar enough to talk about,
sure,
that?
Yeah. Water is the most crucial. When students come in and say, geez, what do I take? I always try and push them towards the water program because it is the most crucial. And again, as we mentioned earlier, you wouldn't notice that today in Florence or Eugene or any place else in the Northwest. And therefore, we have the perception that it's not that big of a deal.
Yet we had a whole summer where there was hardly any rain at all, which is unusual.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly right. And so our programs are online. fully online. Students do not have to leave Florence or any other place to participate in our program. And it includes the testing. It includes the workplace projects like Brenda was referring to. You know, we team up with field work mentors who are where students live. So I say all of that to say we need to be aware of what's going on in our service territory, and currently our service territory is the Western United States. So we have, for water, we have the Northwest where the perception is plenty of it, don't need to worry about it. But then you start getting down into Central California, Southern California, the Southwest, parched. Mm-hmm. They are in, we think we're a big deal in a 5-year drought. They're in 10-year plus drought situation in California. It's just this constant, ever-present issue for them, and it's unbelievably critical. On the energy side, and it's critical because we don't have water, we die. I mean, it's just that simple. And there are a lot of things that people say we can do about it. We can desalinate the ocean. Not a good idea. It's just costly, and there is no place other than the ocean to deposit the concentration of salt that's removed from the water.
Which will increase the salinization of the ocean over time. Yeah.
There you go. And so you have this high concentration of salt, and it just kills everything. So not really a good idea when we're talking about the health of the planet. So water is critical because we need it to survive. Energy, on the other hand, we've got it figured out. We know how to create wind energy. I just read a report that said wind energy is now compared in cost to natural gas. And most people will go, okay, so that's good to know, natural gas. Well, natural gas, 10 years ago, it was $2.50 a therm. It's 50 cents now. And so to have wind energy comparable to a natural gas resource is remarkable. It is just such a leg up for the wind energy industry. Solar, same thing, not as cheap. And if the current administration actually does put a 30% tariff on solar panels, which is what they're now saying, Chinese solar panels, then that'll have a significant impact on the cost of that technology. So we figured out how to do energy. We can do renewable energy. We can do energy conservation. And, you know, push comes to shove, we need energy for a couple of things in our daily lives, electrical energy, a couple of things in our daily lives. And so criticality of that has a different perspective than does water. You know, we need to shut down some, sorry, I don't mean to offend anybody. We need to shut down some coal fire plants. We need to shut down any gas generated fossil fuel plants, because it all has a destruction characteristic when it comes to our airshed. Not a good idea.
Ticking clock.
And yeah. It seems to be going faster and faster. I used to, when I would bring students, I told you I do the Introduction Energy Management Program. I used to bring students into the program. And one of the first things I would do is put a VHS tape. That's how far back this goes. A tape into the cassette player and show them what climate change will look like. Now I say, look outside. Read the newspaper. Check the storms that are coming through, Florida, the Bahamas, Puerto Rico, devastating. You know, this has not happened before. And so the signs are there. And it's the clock seems to be ticking much more quicker than it has in the past.
Russ, if this piques the interest of some student out there and they want to get involved in this, how do they do that?
There are many ways. If they just stop in at the Florence Center, we will put them in touch with Roger and Brenda directly. And they also have a very cleverly named webpage on the lanecc.edu website. What is that webpage address? Do you remember off the top?
Are you talking about our Lane webpage?
Yeah.
The one that we run?
Well, either one.
Okay, so we are at nweei.org. That stands for Northwest Water and Energy Education Institute, .org. And then we are in the science division at Lane. And so if you go to the science division webpage, you'll see energy management, water conservation there. They just click on that, and then we can get them going. I do want to note that we have some limited scholarship dollars. So if somebody is maybe can't cut the bill for the first year of the program, we can certainly assist with that. And it doesn't go through the federal scholarship program, financial aid program. It's something that we do. Yeah.
And Roger, talk a bit with George about your capacity to place students in the industry.
That's a very good point.
We all want to know where the jobs
are. Where are we going to go?
Yeah, exactly.
Where are we going to go? So,
and could I say, I think 10, maybe 11 years ago now, I was a displaced construction worker.
That's right.
In construction management, and wound up taking a couple classes at Lane. And one of them was a certified sustainable building advisor program that Roger helped direct at that time.
Right.
And, that course certainly changed the direction of my life. I wound up in facilities management and planning at the college and continued on furthering my education around environmental issues. And I wouldn't have gotten that job without that coursework. Mm-hmm. They can be life-changing and job-creating. So tell me.
Where can we get a job?
I just want to mention that he makes us call him Dr. Pearson. So that's how far he went with his education. You should be very proud of that, and I'm happy to do that. So with a career technical program, it's a career technical program, and that means 2 years of education, and the expectation is you're not going to transfer to another institution, although we have articulation agreements with four-year institutions. The idea is not to transfer, but to go directly to work. And that means we have to keep our eye on the employment ball, right? We don't want students to come through our program and then get out there and kind of languish and not have a place to go or work to do at a good salary. And so we've gone through a couple of iterations of what we call options. So the foundation is commercial building energy efficiency. They still get that information. But then we add some other credit on top of that, some other classes on top of that. So we've been through the solar option. We were, and this is near to Russ's heart, we've been through the sustainability coordinator option. Those industries have come and gone. I mean, solar is still there, but it's managed by the larger firms now instead of our little mom and pop installers, which is where our students were going. So we've been through those options. The option that we're in now is building energy efficiency with controls management. So all of our buildings, at home, in commercial buildings, are controlled by a device, a heating and cooling system. There's a device in there. In the household, we call it a thermostat. It might be the Nest thermostat.
I got one.
You got one of those. How's it working?
Well, I haven't had to use it yet.
Oh, there you go. you don't touch it, do you? So that's an intelligent thermostat. It learns what you do. And so in commercial buildings, we have a direct digital system now that needs to be programmed. The building needs to be wired for it. We're seeing a lot of retrofit wiring going on to get these direct digital control systems in there. That labor market is the most intense labor market that I've ever seen in my work in energy efficiency ever. I started this gig in the energy efficiency world in 1979. So I've been through a lot of iterations of what's hot, what's not hot, what comes and what goes. I have never seen a labor market like the controls industry. So we're tightly connected to that through professional associations. We're working on certification, ANSI accredited certification exam. It takes a little explanation. Being a part of the association, I've been privileged to see some of the outcome of their research. They did a project in, and this is just a model to look at and to consider. They did a research project on the labor market down in Orange County and California and Los Angeles County, California. And I realize that is lifetime years away from Florence or Eugene or anything in Portland or Oregon or the Northwest, really. They came up with 3,000 plus vacant jobs a month that were going without somebody to take them. The labor market is unbelievably hot in the control sector, and my feeling is that it's not going to ease up for 20 years. They need somebody to install these things. They need somebody to maintain these things. They need somebody to write code for these things, because it's all digital. And then they need somebody to do sales and marketing, to oversee project install. I mean, there's a ton of stuff going on. Conservatively, we say Income is between $55,000 and $60,000 annually with benefits.
And that's right out of the program.
That's coming out of a two-year degree program, which is stunning. That just blows my mind. Thanks.
All right. For more information, contact Lane.
Lane Community College, lanecc.edu or nweei.org.
All right. Roger Ebbage and Brenda Cervantes, Russ Pearson. Thank you all.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And coming up to round out the hour is some of the cast from Mamma Mia and the director on the October edition of Our Town.